October, Year of God 892. 1. The Temple, City of Zion, the Temple Lands. The snow outside the temple was deep for October, even for the city of Zion, and more fell steadily, thickly, only to be whipped into mad swirls by the bitter wind roaring in off Lake Pei. That wind piled thick slabs of broken lake ice on the bitterly cold shore, swept dancing snow demons through the streets, sculpted knife-edged snowdrifts against every obstruction, and chewed at any exposed skin with icy fangs. Throughout the city, its poorest inhabitants huddled close to any source of warmth they could find. But for far too many, there was precious little of that to be had, and parents shivered, watching the weather and their children with worry-puckered eyes as they thought about the endless 5 days stretching out between them and the half-forgotten dream of springtime's warmth. There was no cold inside the temple, of course. Despite the soaring ceiling of its enormous dome, there weren't even any chilly breezes. The structure, reared by the archangels themselves in the misty dawn of creation, maintained its perfect interior temperature with total disdain for what the merely mortal weather of the world might be inflicting upon its exterior. The luxurious personal suites assigned to the members of the Council of Vicars were all magnificent beyond any mortal dream, but some were even more magnificent than others. The suite assigned to Grand Inquisitor Jaspar Clinton was a case in point. It was a corner apartment on the temple's fifth floor. Two entire sides of its main sitting room and dining room were windows, the miraculous, unbreakable, almost totally invisible windows of the Archangel's handiwork. Windows which were completely transparent from within, yet flashed back exterior sunlight like mirrored walls of finely burnished silver, and which were utterly impervious to the heat or cold which passed through and radiated from windows of mortal glass. Paintings and statuary, all chosen with a connoisseur's exquisite discernment, added their own luxurious beauty to the suite's interior, with its thick carpets, indirect sourceless lighting, and perfect temperature. It was far from the first time Archbishop Willem Reyno had visited the Grand Inquisitor's personal chambers. Reyno was the Archbishop of Changwu in the Harchong Empire. He was also the adjutant of the Order of Schuler, which made him Clinton's executive officer within the Office of Inquisition. As a result, Reyno was privy to far more of Clinton's innermost thought than anyone else, including his colleagues among the Group of Four. Yet there were places inside Clinton where even Reyno had never been, places the Archbishop had never wanted to be.
"Come in, Willem, come in,"
Clinton said expansively, as the temple guardsman always stationed outside his chamber opened the door for Reyno.
"Thank you, Your Grace," Reyno murmured, stepping past the guardsman.
Clinton extended his ring of office, and Reyno bent to kiss it, then straightened and tucked his hands into the voluminous sleeves of his cassock. The remnants of a truly enormous meal lay strewn in ruins across the large dining table, and Reyno carefully avoided noticing that there had been two place settings. Most vicars practiced at least some discretion when it came to entertaining their mistresses within the temple's sacred precincts. Everyone knew it happened anyway, yet there were standards to be maintained, appearances to be satisfied. But Jaspar Clinton wasn't most vicars. He was the Grand Inquisitor, the keeper of Mother Church's conscience, and there were times when even Reyno, who had served him for decades, wondered exactly what passed through his mind. How the same man could be so zealous when it came to rooting out the sins of others, even while he indulged his own.
"Fair's fair, Willem," the Archbishop told himself, He may be a zealot, and he's definitely self-indulgent, but at least he's not hypocritical among his peers. And he does draw a remarkably sharp line between sins which are merely venial and those which constitute mortal offences in the eyes of Schuler and God. He can be as irritatingly sanctimonious as anyone you've ever seen, but you've never heard him condemning any of his fellow vicars for weaknesses of the flesh. Spiritual weaknesses, yes, he can be utterly ruthless where they're concerned, but he's remarkably understanding where those perquisites of high office are concerned.
He wondered who tonight's visitor might be. All of Clinton's appetites were huge, and he craved novelty. Indeed, few women could hold his attention for long, and once his interest in them waned, he tended to turn to another with sometimes startling abruptness, although he was never ungenerous when he transferred his interest to another.